16 to 19 degrees, best of the warmth in the southwest. For Scotland and Northern Ireland, though, varying amounts of cloud, a bit of patchy rain in the northwest of Scotland initially, but most will be dry with some sunny spells. 15 to 19, your afternoon highs.
Thanks a lot, Matt. Now on Radio 4, our Book of the Week. Shipping is fundamental to our daily existence, but remains hidden from public view. In a bid to shine a light on this invisible industry, the journalist Rose George heads to Felixstowe to begin an extraordinary journey. Susie Riddell reads Deep Sea and Foreign Going.
Friday. No sensible sailor goes to sea on the day of the crucifixion, or the journey will be followed by ill will and malice. So here I am, on a Friday, looking up at a giant ship that will carry me from this southern English port of Felixstowe to Singapore. For 5 weeks and 9,288 nautical miles through the pillars of Hercules, pirate waters and weather. I stop at the bottom of the ship's gangway, stilled and awed by the immensity of this thing, much of her the colour of a summer day sky, so blue. Her bottom painted dull red, her name, Maersk Kendall. Maersk is the Coca-Cola of freight, with none of the fame. Its parent company is Denmark's largest, its sales equal to 20% of Denmark's gross domestic product. Its ships use more oil than the entire nation. I am an islander who has never been maritime. I don't sail or dive. I swim, but not in terrifying oceans. But standing here in the noise and industry, looking up 60 metres, higher than Niagara Falls, to the top of Kendall, I feel the giddiness of a Christmas morning child. Some is the pull of the sea, and some comes from the knowledge that I am about to embark into a place and space that is usually off-limits and hidden. There are no ordinary citizens on this dock to witness the workings of an industry that is one of the most fundamental to their daily existence. These ships and boxes belong to a business that feeds, clothes, warms and supplies us. They have fueled, if not created, globalisation. They are the reason behind your cheap T-shirt and reasonably priced television. But who looks beyond a television now and sees the ship that carried it? Who cares about the men who brought your breakfast cereal through winter storms? How ironic that the more ships have grown in size and consequence, the more their place in our imagination has shrunk. The Chief of the Royal Navy says we suffer from sea blindness. We travel by cheap flights, not liners. The sea is a distance to be flown over, a downward backdrop between takeoff and landing. It is for leisure and beaches, not for use or work. The Maritime Foundation, a charity that promotes seafarer matters, recently asked the residents of Southampton, a port city, how many goods are transported by sea. The answers were varied, but uniformly wrong. 35%? Not a lot. The answer is nearly everything. I have met well-meaning men, and too few women, in boardrooms across London and New York who complain about widespread ignorance of their industry. They want a better public image for an industry that in the UK alone contributes £8.45 billion in tax and generates 2% of the national economy, more than restaurants, takeaway food and civil engineering combined, and only just behind the construction industry. They despair that shipping only emerges with drama and disaster, a cruise ship sinking or another oil spill and blackened birds. Each year, a shipping publicist told me, more oil is poured down the drain by car mechanics changing engine oil than is spilled by the world's fleet of oil tankers. Yet that invisibility is useful too. There are few industries as defiantly opaque as this one. Even offshore bankers have not developed a system as intricately elusive as the flag of convenience, where ships can fly the flag of a state that has nothing to do with its owner, cargo, crew or route. Look at the backside of boats and you will see they name their home ports as Panama City and Monrovia, not Le Havre or Hamburg. though neither crew nor ship will have ever been to Liberia or Panama. To the International Chamber of Shipping, which thinks flags of convenience pejorative, it prefers the term open registries, there is nothing inherently wrong with this system. A former US Coast Guard commander preferred to call it managed anarchy. The benefits of flagging out vary according to registry, but there will always be lower taxes, laxer labour laws, and no requirement to pay expensive American or British crews protected by unions and legislation. The citizens of rich countries own ships, but they are sailed by the cheap labour of Filipinos, Bangladeshis, Chinese, Indonesians. Seafaring can be a good life. On paper, the seas are tightly controlled. The sea, though, dissolves paper. In practice, the ocean is still the world's wildest place, both because of its fearsome natural danger and because of how easy it is out there to slip out of the boundaries of law and civilization that seem so firm ashore. Imagine you have a problem on a ship. Who do you complain to when you are employed by a Manila manning agency on a ship owned by an American, flagged by Panama and managed by a Cypriot in international waters? Lawyers who work for seafarers' rights describe their clients as moving targets who work in no man's lands. They are careful to say that most owners are scrupulous, but for the unscrupulous ones, there is no better place to be. Two men from Kendal have descended to fetch me. They look Asian and exhausted, so they are typical crew. They advised me to hold the gangway rail tightly. One hand for you, miss, and one for the ship. I have travelled plenty and strangely on land. To Saddam Hussein's birthday party in Tikrit. To Bhutanese football matches blessed by Buddhist monks. Down sewers and through vast slums in great cities. I look at this gangway, leading up four stories of height to 39 days at sea, six ports, two oceans, five seas, and the most compellingly foreign environment I'm ever likely to encounter. Lead on, able seaman. I will follow. The people of Kendal live and work and play in its accommodation house, a cream superstructure placed towards the rear of the ship, a direction that I should now call aft. The building rises 10 stories up to the bridge, the navigational centre of the ship. My cabin is D-deck, port, in the officer levels. Although Maersk is known for running good ships, the interior decor is the prison side of comfort. Plain walls, institutionally dimpled rubber floors, clinical lighting. The view is busy. Every port between Felixstowe and Singapore requires containers, boxes in industry language, to be loaded and others to be discharged. The blankness of the boxes is entrancing, although this is an unpopular, weird opinion among people who work with them, who think they are boring, opaque, stuff carrying stuff. There are more than 100,000 ships at sea carrying all the solids, liquids and gases we need to live. Only 6,000 are container vessels like Kendal, but they make up for this small proportion by their dizzying capacity. If Kendal discharged her containers onto trucks, the line of traffic would be 60 miles long. I watch a crane lifting a container into the air, its cables dancing it across onto the ship, thudding it into place in front of my porthole, then retracting with serpentine loops. It would be balletic if it weren't for the thuds. My view now is a grey box, its corrugated iron ridges slightly scuffed and rusted. It is probably empty. Britain is post-industrial and has little to export.
"Waste and hot air," one laconic port official said when I asked him what our exports consist of.
He could have included weapons too, and scrap metal, exported to Turks who have invested in recycling plants to process it, unlike the British who call it waste, wastefully. But that would be it. The geographic boundary of the Suez Canal is also a boundary of plenty. Beyond it, Kendall will begin to collect what the East has made for the West, gathering up goods all the way to Thailand, before turning around and fetching the bounty home. I sleep through our departure. For someone used to land, the movement of the ship turns it into a giant crib, though one with engine noise. I wake in German Bight, something that sounds like a tree disease, but is a parcel of sea passed over. For most people, it is a place that exists only in the shipping forecast. I go for morning coffee with the crew in their ramen room. There is no chance of missing them. Eating and drinking times on Kendall are usually well attended. Eating punctuates boredom. There are only 20 men and one woman, Pinky the cook, employed on Kendall, a fact that would baffle anyone working on a military ship where thousands can live. The officers' nationalities are mixed, but the crew, non-officers, are all Filipino. This is to be expected. Filipinos make up more than a third of all crews worldwide. A quarter of a million of them are at sea. They are popular, a Filipino seafarer once told me, because we are cheap and speak good English. They look tired. The officers drive and navigate the ship, but these men care for it, with labour that is manual and exhausting, constantly climbing the stacks to check on 6,000 boxes, hosing salt and oil off the decks, fixing, repairing, tending, welding, heaving. Still, the crew are friendly. They have a ready humour and a new face is something different. Some have been at sea for months and hardly ashore, but that is how they want it. More months at sea puts off the uncertainty involved in getting a new contract. Francis was once on a ship for 10 months. Pinky has been on board for 6 months now. Needs must. All the crew have children. One says, "The first time I was home for my son's birthday was when he was 7. Missing births is as common as missing birthdays. It is the price you pay for the money you earn. These seafarers have calculated carefully. So many years buy so big a house. 15 usually, or 10 if you are lucky. More buys a shop. More puts all your children through decent schools, colleges and universities. The calculations are not always accurate. Julius has been at sea for 17 years now and is still here. Every time I come on board I think I will stop, but then I can't escape." I find Kendall beautiful, an astonishing, remarkable thing. Thousands of tons of thousands of types of cargo, floating on miles deep of nothing but water, travelling safely to the other side of the world, just as she does every 2 months, regular as a yo-yo or boomerang. Kendall's day job is to travel to Felixstowe, Bremerhaven and Rotterdam, to call at Le Havre in France, then go down the Suez Canal to Oman, on to Colombo, Sri Lanka, then into the Straits of Malacca to stop at Port Klang in Malaysia, then Singapore, before the final destination of Lem Chabang, Thailand, where she will turn around and come back. The World Shipping Council, attempting to amaze, informs visitors to its website that a container ship travels the equivalent of 3/4 of the way to the moon and back in 1 year. It doesn't need to quote that fact to impress. An ordinary voyage on an ordinary ship is extraordinary enough.
Susie Riddell was reading from Deep Sea and Foreign Going by Rose George. The abridger is Lawrence Waring and the producer is Ailey McCready. The Shipping Bulletin is next here on Radio 4 and this will take us there.
Thank you.
And now the shipping forecast issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 0015 on Tuesday the 10th of September 2013. There are warnings of gales in Forties, Tyne, Dogger, Fisher, Humber and Thames. The general synopsis at 1800. Low, Denmark, 1008, expected Humber, 1007 by 1800 Tuesday. The area forecasts for the next 24 hours. Viking, north at Sera. Northerly, 5 to 7. Rain, moderate or good. South at Sera. Northerly or northeasterly, 5 or 6, becoming variable 4. Then northerly, 5 later. Rain, moderate or good. Forties. North, 6 to gale 8. Rain, moderate or good. Cromarty, 4th. Northwest, 5 to 7.